This is a 14th level ability to get somebody in the crow's nest.
Yeah, okay. Right. Yeah, right. You got a point. Okay.
We're doing a lot of apologetics here. This is a really shit ability. This is the first Aquaman thematic ability. It's like, oh, what do you do? It's like nothing useful, but it's nautical themed.
Welcome to Monsters and Multiclass, your Dungeons & Dragons fix. I'm Kevin Odey.
I'm Jared Bornicle.
And I'm Will Meldon.
And on this episode, we are taking a look at the Fathomless, a new warlock subclass added in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. It's all about tentacles and ocean stuff, I guess.
Hentai.
Whoa, not where I was going.
I had to get it out of the way.
Yeah, as I say, yeah, it's all the jokes. Yeah.
All right, so to... start off here, let's just talk about kind of the flavor of this. So did I skip anything? I feel like I jumped in and that just screwed things up.
You again forgot to do the schedule change that we just talked about.
Oh, me. Yeah, so let's talk about the schedule change. If you're just tuning in and maybe you saw that you had two episodes in the queue instead of just one, we are switching to a weekly format for the podcast. For the YouTube watchers, this affects literally nothing. For our podcast listeners, just keep in mind you will see weekly episodes that are much shorter compared to what we usually did. We're just breaking out the segments into individual episodes instead of having, you know, two subclasses or a monster and a multi-class. It's just going to be one or the other. So if you have any questions, message us on all the places: YouTube, Reddit, Twitter. So the Fathomless. I can't believe I did that two episodes in a row. I am right. Garbage. to take a look at the flavor here, this is a warlock who is rooted in the ocean. Is kind of the main focus here. And I think really trying to get across that concept of the great beyond of the ocean, the depths that are unexplored, the incomprehensible monstrosities that may be in the water, which is definitely like a primal fear that I feel like all humans just hold somewhere in them. Look at Jaws, right? Is that the same thing? Sharks? Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you want a shark to be your patron? Here you go.
There you go.
It's just like a regular ass hammerhead shark.
Bad news. This is a tentacle themed patron.
Darn it. So some of the parts it mentions, you know, perhaps you were born into a generational cult that venerates the Fathomless and its spawn, or you might have been shipwrecked and on the brink of drowning when your patron's grasp offered you a chance at life. Whatever the reason for your pact, the sea and its unknown depths call out to you. So one of the ways that it does mention that you may get these is that I like is a godlike hallucination dreamed into being by Kuo Toas, which I know we've talked about on our Kuo Toa episode. Kuo Toa, you know what? We get it wrong in the episode too. So there's just a teaser for you, which maybe Kevin will link. I'm going to keep having you link episodes because that seems like a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
So to start off here, we got some spell lists. I'm sorry. I'm dropping the ball on this. Do you guys have anything that you want to say about the flavor of this? This isn't the Jared and Multiclass podcast. Oh, nothing. Dang it. Nope. I was doing it right.
I don't know. It kind of fits a unique niche, whatever. There can be some overlap with other ones. Like if you go like the Great Old One pact and you could get like Cthulhu in there. Cthulhu could also be a Fathomless. Things like that. But Cthulhu is, I'm pretty sure, copyrighted and trademarked and Dungeons & Dragons can't use it. So here we are. But...
yeah, I also wonder, just because Critical Role has obviously had a huge influence on Wizards of the Coast, they literally released a book around it, and there is a character in that who went Hexblade, but like would 100% line up with this. That's even part of his backstory, is he was shipwrecked and offered, like somebody said, or you know, a patron basically called out to him. So I wonder if there was some like hopes there of basically getting people excited because you could just say like, oh, it's kind of like Ford from Critical Role. I'm not even going to put it past them. Again, they literally released a book set in the Critical Role world. So it's hard to ignore the influence. So to start off here, they do get some spells, expanded spell list. All of them, I guarantee, are going to be somewhat water or storm based. At first level, we get Create or Destroy Water and Thunder Wave. Then second spell level is Gust of Wind and Silence, which I guess is not storm-based at all, but I guess the silence of being underwater, that could be cool.
Okay, yeah.
Third level, we get Lightning Bolt and Sleet Storm. Fourth is Control Water and Summon Elemental, but it can only be a water elemental, which is fair, but also, like, screw you.
Like, right, yeah. Then, I don't feel like it's so powerful to give Warlocks just a regular summon elemental.
No.
That it needed to be, But that's fine. It's flavorful.
Right, right.
It's a water warlock. You should not summon fire elementals with your water warlock.
But what about an air one? I think an air one makes sense.
All right, I'll give you air.
All right.
Yeah.
Then
an earth? I mean, there's an ocean floor. And this is like the bottomless depths.
There's an ocean floor. It's bottomless. The earth is the place that doesn't exist.
He's got you there. It's kind of the absence of the bottom that makes this such an interesting subclass.
Yeah.
all right. And then fifth level, they get Bigby's Hand, which appears as a tentacle. Okay. And sure. Then Cone of Cold. So all around good spells. Yeah. I mean, I like them. And for Warlocks, they just automatically get them added to their spells, right?
No, I was about to say, point of clarification, when they learn new spells, they can now choose from these in addition to the Warlock ones. It's not like Cleric where it's always known and prepared or something like that.
Perfect, okay.
So not as powerful, because you do have to pick these over something else.
Right.
But they're nice options, very flavorful. None of them are, I mean, Gust of Wind's not super great, but they're okay.
Right, but I could see taking that as a flavor choice, and Create or Destroy Water also isn't that important to take, but whatever. There's no options at like the higher levels that I'm like, why would you bother taking
People argue you could use Create or Destroy Water to just kill like ancient dragons, so
oh my god.
You could create the water in their lungs.
Spells you don't have to be able only to see it. Do what they say they do.
10 gallons of clean water within range in an open container. You don't have to see.
Well, lungs are an open container now, I guess.
Well, if their mouth is open, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It is.
And they just can't cough it up.
Nope.
Okay. You know, this isn't important.
This was like a really, really like original, like, when, yeah, 5th edition first came out, people arguing about this.
One of those things they shut the forums down over.
Yes.
All right. So let's get into the actual class, starting with the first level feature, Tentacle of the Deeps. You can magically summon a spectral tentacle that strikes at your foes. As a bonus action, you create a 10-foot long tentacle at a point that you can see within 60 feet of you. The tentacle lasts for 1 minute or until you use this feature to create another tentacle. When you create the tentacle, you can make a melee spell attack against one creature within 10 feet of it. On a hit, the creature takes 1d8 cold damage, and its speed is reduced by 10 feet until the start of your next turn. When you reach 10th level, it goes to 2d8 damage. As a bonus action on your turn, you can move the tentacle up to 30 feet and repeat the attack. You can summon the tentacle a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus and regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest.
So it basically amounts to, as a bonus action, do an extra 1d8 damage and reduce their speed by 10 feet.
Yep, which is kind of like which cantrip.
Chill touch.
No, it's not.
Frostbite? No, I know. Yeah, terribly.
Ray of Frost?
Ray of Frost.
Yeah,
yes.
Something like that.
Which is 1d8 and Frostbite, reduces speed by 10 feet.
Yeah, and then it goes up to 2d8, so I'm happy it scales. It's okay, I guess. I don't know. I guess usually... Yeah, like...
I like it a lot, so...
Compared to Hexblade's first level abilities, it's complete crap. But compared to like the Fiend, where you like regain some health if you reduce it to 0 hit points, it's like, yeah, this is nice. It'll come up a lot. So I feel like there's that really big power imbalance in Warlocks. And sure. This falls on the weaker end, but it puts it more in balance with most of the other Warlock subclasses anyways.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll use it. It's not like, oh, that's worthless. When will this ever come up?
Yeah, I mean, a bonus action to do an extra 1d8 damage to me sounds really worthwhile. And
yeah,
it does kind of lock down an area. Well, not even locks it down. You're very easy for you to move it, 30 feet and make another attack. Right. So I don't know. I think getting an extra d8 and then 2d8 damage in the future every single turn, that adds up for forever. And the warlocks aren't bonus action heavy at all.
Right.
So I think that's where it's important is warlocks aren't the type of class that you're going to be fighting with six other ways to use their bonus action. So to me, it's just free damage.
Yeah.
Well, the exception is Hex. So there is a little bit of competition, okay, but that's not an every round thing.
No.
So this is a good way to eke damage out of your bonus action.
So like first round bonus action Hex, get that going. Then the next round bonus action this. That being said, I did play like a higher level warlock in our kind of like intermittent campaign. Not intermittent, what doesn't matter. In our like in between campaign.
It was just a campaign, but it felt like an intermittent campaign to us. I know what you mean.
Yeah. And I had that thought. Like I had Hex, and that was going to be like my main thing. I always did Hex. And then of these other ways to do bonus action damage that I ended up not using a lot because I was constantly moving Hex around. It takes a bonus action to move it again. And I had like the 24-hour Hex at that point. We were high enough level. So I only had to cast it once and just maintain concentration. But things died so frequently. As, you know, because that's kind of how 5th edition combat works, where it's smaller, weaker things for the most part. Like a large number of weaker things.
To some extent,
where that I felt like I was constantly moving that around.
Sure. To some extent, I think that was a bit campaign specific because it was specifically a war campaign. So the intent was that there would be a lot of middle tier enemies instead of one really big one and then like some smaller tier enemies. So you're not entirely wrong. I do wonder how much of that was because of the campaign. And even more, maybe you just don't care as much about Hex if you've got this. Maybe you've got something for your bonus action. It does 1d8 damage. How much damage does Hex do?
1d6.
1d6. Okay, but so
additionally to this tentacle damage, you can tentacle Hex them.
Would the Hex damage add on to the tentacle?
You're attacking them, aren't you?
No, you're
tentacles. You make it. Well, you make a melee spell attack.
Okay.
Whenever you hit with an attack.
Okay.
Until the spell ends, you deal an extra 1d6 necrotic damage to the target whenever you hit it with an attack.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that sounds to me like Hex would add to it.
Right. You know, it's hard to pass up Hex, though, especially if you are an Eldritch Blast Warlock.
Yeah.
Because every beam or blast of it, you know, because it, as you level up and instead of doing 2d10, it's like you get two attacks and then each attack would apply the d6.
Okay. Well, what if you say you're somebody like me who just says, I don't want to take Hex because I just don't want to? Now I feel like I'm not just totally missing out. I know, Will, you're shaking. You're like, why wouldn't you just take Hex? Because to me, that's the most boring spell to concentrate on. You cast a spell. You're now doing 1d6 extra damage. You give them disadvantage on an ability check, which...
That has never come up.
unless you're teamed up with a grappler.
Yeah, I remember like
that's the only time.
One or two times that it's come up in games, and I've just been like, oh shit, this is the moment. It's finally been worthwhile. Right. It is about the damage, and I don't know. It's just, it's good, but let's say it's just not exciting, and I don't want to be forced to play that. If you are using this instead as your bonus action and getting that extra attack, which means an extra chance to break concentration, which is always a benefit, as well as the reduced movement speed, which I don't know if that's crazy worthwhile, but it's at least something that's going on. I like things that open up play styles, and if people are feeling locked into just casting Hex, it's like, here's another option. You don't have to cast Hex, and you're not going to be, you know, dog shit tier.
No, for sure. And in addition to opening up your bonus action, it also opens up your concentration.
Right.
Hex's concentration. I'm actually just wish I thought of this sooner, bringing up other concentration spells that you could have up all the time. Oh, Hex is pretty good.
Hex is a good one. You should concentrate on Hex.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you should. I mean, there's obviously a lot of good concentration spells. Hex is really the only like kind of like old day one you would constantly have up.
And you can still be your Eldritch Blast machine.
Right. Yeah, well, then you start getting into the summons as you get to third level spells.
Which is pretty fitting for this
class
as well.
For sure. Yeah, those options.
All right, so yeah, I think that's a fair overview, though, is that in competition with the Hex spell that a lot of Warlocks lean into anyways, it doesn't compete on damage, and the utility of reducing their speed by 10 feet isn't really enough. I think the only added benefit is that additional chance to break concentration on a wizard or something, because you can have this tentacle just pop up wherever, which is great.
Right.
And if you're popping out two Eldritch Blasts and a tentacle, that's three hits instead of two. That's great.
Yeah, and add versatility on what you attack. And like I said, no concentration, so.
Right. But this
it doesn't take a spell slot, too. Actually, yeah, I forgot Warlocks have limited spell slots. It's not like Hex is a cantrip.
Right.
Right. That's also a big deal. I was thinking, oh, it's just a first level spell, whatever. Who cares? But it's a Warlock. They're, at this point, they have, what, one of them? At first level, you just have one?
Yes. At first level, you get one.
You quickly get to two, but yeah. Yeah, spell slots. Although, yeah, you have two until 11th level, at which point you get three.
Right.
And sure, it's for short rests, but it's still very limited.
Right. And we talked
like, about...
Go ahead.
Yeah, getting Hex up, using your one of two spell slots, and then immediately losing concentration. Like, that's terrible.
Right.
That's like day ruining.
Yeah, and it happens. It's like, you're going to get hit. You can't get around that.
Right. So this is definitely a safer bet. All right, I'm coming around on it. The art bugs me, though. Like all the Tasha's ones have the official class, subclass art. And this one, the guy is, hands out like this, and there's the tentacle wrapped around like it's like a snake ready to strike.
But I don't think that's not trying to mirror what this tentacle of the deeps is.
I know, but they don't have a feature like that, though.
Oh, well, I guess that's
like this is the only spectral tentacle.
That's just how their Eldritch Blast is flavored, as it's a little tentacle that wraps around and like lashes out.
At 120 feet.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Just keeps going.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right, so what they also get at first level is Gift of the Sea. You gain a swimming speed of 40 feet, and you can breathe underwater. Obviously not going to come up every session, but when it does, you're really happy.
Right. Obviously, completely adventure and campaign dependent. People like to do like sea, like naval campaigns, ocean travel, pirate campaigns. This is fantastic for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I get the feeling that'll get some use in the future. I want to do a pirate campaign again. Pirate campaigns are great. Yeah. All right, so then at 6th level, we get Oceanic Soul. You are now even more at home in the depths. You gain resistance to cold damage. In addition, when you are fully submerged, any creature that is also fully submerged can understand your speech, and you can understand theirs. It's not the only thing you get at 6th level, so that's good.
Yeah. Another little flavor. Again, if it's the type of campaign where the Gift of the Sea comes up a lot, this is going to come up a lot too.
Right.
So.
The other benefit is that with your other Warlock stuff and just your tentacle as it is, you're not going to feel like the weakest member of the party. So when these situations come up, it feels really good when you do have that water-based instance that's like, oh yes, now I have all of my little tricks that make it worthwhile.
So it has the cavalier vibe and for the fighter,
yeah,
where they have a bunch of stuff where it improves being mounted and mounted combat, but for when that's not possible, it's still fine.
Right.
Like, it has enough.
Yeah, I agree. The only issue is I think there is an invocation that allows you and everyone to breathe underwater. And that seems really fitting for this subclass, but I probably wouldn't take it if I was getting underwater breathing and swim speed and all of this stuff for free. I'd tell the cleric to cast a spell and help everybody else out.
Yeah, say Gifts of the Depth, 5th level prerequisite invocation. You could breathe underwater and you gain a swim speed equal to your walking speed. You could also cast water breathing once without expending a spell slot.
Yeah.
For a long rest. Yeah, so that kind of...
So it's like Warlocks could already get this. It's just now baked in, but that makes it conflicting with an invocation that would make sense to take that allows you to give it to other people.
Right.
So one way that this could have been made better is basically take out the cold resistance, because I just don't care. It's kind of nice, but it's not that big a deal. And just basically give that invocation for free. Let you give underwater breathing to your entire party and let them speak underwater. Right. It just seems more fitting to me and doesn't have that issue with the invocation.
Yeah, I like that.
Then Guardian Coil is their next 6-level ability. Your Tentacle of the Deeps can now defend you and others, interposing itself between them and harm. When you or a creature you can see takes damage while within 10 feet of the tentacle, you can use your reaction to choose one of those creatures and reduce that damage to the creature by 1d8. When you reach 10th level, you can reduce it by 2d8. So also pretty good. I mean, that's just like consistent goodness. We've already talked about, I think in the last episode, that warlocks aren't really reaction heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So this gives a good use for it. You can always probably have your tentacle either nearby you or nearby one of your party members. And that's just consistent damage you're taking off.
Yeah, this is one of those abilities I could see used every single round.
Right.
Because you'll probably almost always have one of these tentacles out, especially by the time you get to 6th level, your proficiency bonus is a bit higher.
I think it's at 3.
And then, yeah, just uses your reaction. There you go.
Yep. And then, wait, actually, is it at 5th? What is the proficiency bonus? Come on. How do I not know this? I know it's 5 at 9th. Nope, I'm wrong. So at 5th level, it's plus 3. At 9th level, it's plus 4. So by this point, you've got plus 3. That's right. Probably going to be every encounter. Probably. You might have one that you don't. So yeah, that's great. It's good. Fits the flavor. That's it. It's not crazy interesting, but it is just good. There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, some nice party protection. And yourself. Reduce name, yeah.
The one thing, okay, this is what I will just mention. Just kind
of re-saying what it does.
I know, right? This is the one thing that I will point out, is it does specify when a creature you can see takes damage, and I do like when it says takes damage instead of when they're hit by an attack. So this means that it does work as well for spells. So that's important to keep in mind.
Interesting. Okay. Little weird of like how you would flavor that against like a constitution saving throw or something.
The
guess, like being poisoned,
the tentacles just wrap around you and their slimy embrace just lets you push past whatever is sickening you.
Right.
I was imagining it slapping them on the back. Oh, you're good. You're good, pal.
Cough it out. You're all right. Just encouragement tentacles.
Right.
All right. So then at 10th level, we get grasping tentacles. You learn the spell Evard's Black Tentacles. It counts as a warlock spell for you, but it doesn't count against the number of spells you know. You can also cast it once without a spell slot, and you regain the ability to do so when you finish a long rest. Whenever you cast this spell, your patron's magic bolsters you, granting you a number of temp HP equal to your warlock level. Moreover, damage can't break your concentration on this spell. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And we should probably cover what the spell is real quick. 4th level spell, 1 action to cast, concentration for a minute, 90-foot range. You fill a 20-foot cube with these ebony tentacles that becomes difficult terrain. When a creature enters the affected area for the first time or starts its turn there, it must make a dex saving throw or take 3d6 bludgeoning damage and be restrained, not grappled, restrained by the tentacles until the spell ends. At the start of its turn, if it's all in the area and is already restrained, the tentacle... it takes another 3d6 bludgeoning damage. To break the restraint, the creature has to use its action to do a strength or dexterity check against your spell save DC. On a success, it frees itself. It's still in the middle of difficult terrain, though.
Yeah, so Evar's Black Tentacles is already a really good spell. It's also a really good spell for warlocks because they have a lot of ways to move creatures around with the repelling blast or the opposite
of that. The talisman?
What's the talisman do?
We talked about last episode.
Doesn't pull creatures, right?
There's the invocation with the talisman where, as a reaction, you can...
do damage up to proficiency bonus and push them 10 feet.
Yeah.
When you're hit by it. Yes. Okay. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways to, you know, push and pull people around. I don't know. I mean, this is just really cool, and you could just kind of make this like the center of the combat and just try pushing things into it, keeping them into it. And any one creature you succeed on that gets restrained is not going to have a good time. You're doing a lot of damage.
Right. Yeah. 3d6 every round automatic. They don't resave for that. Their entire action. So they're basically their entire turn. They get out of it. Maybe. And any attack on them has advantage.
Yeah. So
it's pretty great.
That's
and
wild.
If you, and it, since it doesn't take concentration, or it does take concentration, yes. It just can't be broken.
Yes.
Okay.
Which.
Okay. Yeah. Which is probably fair.
Yeah. Right. Because, oh yeah, you can concentrate on Hex and Grasping Tentacles. Yeah.
That's what I was about to say. Concentrate on Hex, give them the disadvantage on strength checks so that the fighter could shove them in more easily.
No, thankfully,
and they can still do that, just not a disadvantage for the person. But
yeah, this is, I will say, a class defining feature, to say the least. The fact that you get, again, not just this spell, you get the ability to not break concentration on it from taking damage, which is great. But also you get some temp HP from it, means that this is your big guns. When the big guns come out, this is getting cast.
Right. And you can cast it once for free.
Yeah, without a spell slot. Now, the only downside of Evard's Black Tentacles, it can't be upcasted. So even at 10th level, you're now casting 5th level spells. So you're probably not going to cast this again, because you're not going to get all those other benefits from it. Wait, actually.
It depends.
It says whenever you cast this spell, your patron's magic bolsters you. It doesn't say whenever you cast this spell in this way.
Oh, okay. So you could use your spell slot.
Your
magic spell slot. Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty wild, actually. That means every time you cast this spell, damage can't break your concentration on it. I figured that was like a once per long rest.
And the 10 hit points. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That makes it worthwhile, where even though you're casting it at 5th level, it feels like a 5th level spell when you're getting 10 plus temp HP. Because if you're a level 15 warlock, you're getting 15 temp HP.
Right.
Wow. Okay, that's really cool.
Yeah, I like it. It's it's pretty late for such... It obviously cannot be any earlier
because
it's a 4th level spell
and it's a lot.
Nuts. Yeah, and so balance-wise, it makes perfect sense. But before this, it feels like, oh, yeah, these things are just okay. And then, like, boom, here's the really big, the big guns, as you said, the cool thing. But it could be a long time before you hit 10th level.
Right.
This could be one of those classes where it sort of feels like waiting for this.
Right. Yeah, and that's definitely just a fight that you're going to get into with a lot of classes where I can tell they want to put this really cool thing in. And I'm obviously making assumptions here, but I get the feeling they were like in a room and they had this idea for the Grasping Tentacles and they were like, this is the focal point. This is the cool thing of the class. Let's build the rest of the class around this. And because of that, you get these kind of weaker earlier things because it's like, well, once they hit 10th level, if we, you know, allow this other tentacle to do even more powerful stuff, then it's going to get crazy. So instead, you get this where it feels like the curve isn't entirely linear. It's like tiny power creep, tiny power, and boom, goes way off the charts. And then levels out. I mean, it's not like it's like going to be...
Well, I want to say off the charts. It's not broken.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's not just like that 17th level rogue ability, the one that like lets you double your sneak attack or whatever.
Oh,
yeah. That one was ridiculous.
Yeah. I did say this might feel like you're waiting, but I don't think that's actually quite fair because warlocks just get a bunch of cool stuff leading up to it. You're constantly getting new invocations, spells known going up, things like that. So,
yeah, it's good. And 10th isn't crazy high. We talked about like, you know, 12th to 14th. Some people might not see. I think 10th is pretty common play levels for a good amount of time, too. So it's in a good spot.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, I'll say it. We're not the last one yet. I've got, you know, one left here. The only thing that I have is like a complaint so far is that I feel like everything about this class is in combat. There hasn't been a single non-combat feature.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the last one is. I don't remember what it is, so we'll find out. Fathomless Purge is at 14th level. You can magically open temporary conduits to watery destinations. As an action, you can teleport yourself and up to five other willing creatures that you can see within 30 feet of you amid a whirl of tentacles. You all vanish, and then you reappear up to a mile away in a body of water you've seen, pond size or larger, no puddles, or within 30 feet of you. Each of you appearing in an unoccupied space within 30 feet of the others. Once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you finish a short or long rest. Well, it is out of combat, kinda.
Sure, yeah. And I'm laughing that they take the time to point out it must be pond size. Like, that's like a unit of measurement. Right.
Like, what? Well, hey, don't speak too soon.
When is it a pond?
There's a lot of standard units that we don't understand. Like a hogshead? I don't know exactly what that is. Maybe a pond is a specific unit of measurement.
I don't know. If you ever try to like Google the difference between lake or pond, it's just like, it's a mess. Nobody knows. So I don't think so.
Literally,
a pond
no
is smaller
knows.
Than a lake. That is it. Yeah. How big is a lake? How big is a pond? None of those things matter.
Okay. So yeah. All right,
but regardless of that, I mean, yeah, the DM discretion, basically. The 1 mile limit feels weird. Basically, that just makes this an escape from combat. It's a 14th level ability, the capstone of a subclass, and it's really just mainly used to run away if you're all about to die.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, 14th level warlock features are normally going to be so, I guess, just flavor or like just kind of a small thing to throw. Most of them are actually really, really good at 14th level. So yeah. I'm not sure what the rationale was behind this.
I was going to say, yeah, like the fiend gets hurled through hell, the coolest ability ever.
Greatest ability indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when you're this hit with an very attack. Front-loaded. When you hit, get hit with an attack, you like what? Use your reaction and send them to do 10d10 psychic damage.
Yeah, they're literally hurled through hell, hit so hard, they like burst through all nine layers and take 10d10 psychic damage. It reels from the horror.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
This one you could teleport to a pond.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whirl of tentacles. That's kind of horrifying.
Sure. There's, and you had to have seen it. Too.
This is a gameplay defining feature, because as the Fathomless Warlock, everywhere you go, you have to know where the pawns are.
You know, so there could be some really weird situations where like you've been in a town and you've been around and you've seen the bodies of water, and then you're coming back and the town's been sieged and closed off and you need to get in, and now you get teleported.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to come up with a lot of like really... really specific ways that this can be useful. I'm going to say this is up to the DM to make your warlock fathomless feel like this is a good feature, because you're not just going to get this one given to you. It's got to be worked for.
Right.
Now, if we're talking about that open ocean idea again, then this actually can be used in combat and in a way is pretty cool. If you were like on a boat, let's say, and you spent an action, you basically get to shuffle everybody around into an advantageous position. Because if they're all within 30 feet of you, you can suck them up into your tentacles and then spit them out. They do have to be willing, so it's got to be your team. You can't just like, you know, move enemies around at your discretion. But
right. It
does give a lot of leeway on where they come out of. So even if you're like teleporting right. to yourself, you could rearrange things in a way that's helpful. That's really specific. If you're on a boat, it makes a lot of sense. But if you're fighting next to a pond, maybe it also makes sense. I don't know. I'm grasping at some straws here.
Yeah. No, you bring up a good point. On a boat, an action to rearrange positioning of your party. Sure.
It sounds useful, right? Like, I'm not sure if it actually is useful. But it sounds useful. You could, you know, if you're like, let's say it's start of combat and you're all right next to each other, you go early on, or you tell people to wait or at least stay within 30 feet of you, and boom, you use your action, and now everyone is where they need to be. That is useful. And maybe that means putting people up higher than they'd be able to access. You know, like up in the crow's nest. Right. There you go. You're up in the crow's nest now.
Right. As long as it's within 30 feet of you.
I don't think...
Of others. Everyone needs to be within 30 feet of them. Each other. Each of you appearing in an unoccupied space within 30 feet of the others.
Okay, so it's like you choose a point and it has to be within 30 feet of each other, basically. That's kind of weird.
Well, 15 feet of that point, then.
I don't...
Yeah, it gets weird. You have to make sure everybody is within 30 feet of everyone else, or it's just like... Can you chain it out?
It sounds like no, because right? It says each of you appearing in a non-occupied space within 30 feet of the others.
Then yeah, everyone needs to be within 30 feet of each other.
Right. So you're basically choosing a point and you've got a 15-foot radius. So if that point is the middle of the... that's just too confusing. If it was the middle of the mast, then 15 feet down, you can put everyone on the ground. 15 feet up, hopefully 30 feet high is... tall enough right. for the crow's nest.
I if it is a 30-foot crow's nest, you could put one person up there and then everyone else has to be directly below it grouped up.
Kinda, yeah, basically. Or you just put them 5 feet up and they just drop a little bit. And that gives you a bit more leeway. Doesn't say they have to be
still grouped. Still grouped up, but...
This is a 14th level ability to get somebody in the crow's nest.
Yeah, okay. right. All yeah, right. You got a point. Okay.
We're doing a lot of apologetics here. This is a really shit ability. It is, yeah. This is the first Aquaman thematic ability. He's like, oh, what do you do? It's like nothing useful, but it's nautical themed.
Yeah, okay. I think I talked myself out of it. I was like, maybe there's these specific scenarios where it can be used in combat. Not really.
No, I we're getting into real situational things where you're like, you're running into combat and you know you're not going to reach whoever you need to reach and they got a bunch of ranged attacks and they happen to be standing next to a pond. And then you can just teleport to them if you've already been over there.
Or what if, like, you're within...
Or if you are in the ocean.
Yeah, or like maybe you're a mile away from the ocean and some boats crash into each other like a little bit off the shore and one of them's carrying spaghetti and then the spaghetti's falling to the bottom of the ocean to cover a fish city and you need to teleport to that because you have an unlimited supply of spaghetti strainers and you can get it.
And the important thing is that the fish are all on ketogenic diets, so if that spaghetti gets even near them, ruined. Their weight loss plan is gone.
Mm-hmm. And I apologize, that's just a really long convoluted BoJack reference, like most things I say. So yeah, this is worthless.
Yeah,
or at least just not very good. And the only time that it really would be worthwhile is if the DM says, hey party, a problem is happening about a mile away towards the shore. If only you could get there quick enough, and the warlock goes, my time has come, and the tentacles whirl up and they teleport there.
Right.
And nobody had to use a spell slot to get there quickly. Hooray. Right.
And they could do it again after a short rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I'd rather see is kind of copy this, like there's the druid spell, which we've recently got in our main campaign. I've already got a ton of use on transportation via plants or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, there's not a range limit on it. You know, a large plant that you are on, you put a gate in and you pop out in a large plant you have seen. So just do that with water.
Right. Transport via water.
Yeah. There you go. Make it so you get rid of the range restriction, just you know, same plane of existence. And make it a once per long rest. You know, don't do it a short or long rest.
Sure.
And then there you go. You're high enough level where there's already other ways to get the transportation.
But
like
now
that.
It's free.
And so now you get one for free, and that's a really nice capstone to the subclass, and there you go. I'd even be willing to still keep it as an action instead of like 10 minutes, because that way you still have the utility of the rare chance where it would come up in combat where you all need to escape immediately.
I think transport via plants is an action.
Is it? Okay. Yes. I can see that being something that's 10 minutes as well. But
I could, but I'm pretty sure it is. Let me look that up. Transport.
Yeah, it's one action, but it's one round. So it turns the tree into a teleportation pad. So everybody has to run through.
Sixth level spell, casting time, one action, duration, one round. Right. So, yeah. I mean, just copying that and making it transport via water, and it has to be once the size of a pond. Sure. You guys can't just jump into a glass of water.
I was thinking, if you remove that restriction, you can really fuck someone's day up.
Yeah.
It's like, I got to assassinate the king. Just wait till he's like drinking water before the entire party bursts out of the glass.
So, I don't know. I've got nothing else on that specific feature. Let's get into some final thoughts here. What are the overall feelings on this subclass? Taking it at all, because, again, the beginning was good. I know it kind of petered out, but...
Yeah, overall, I do like it. It does fill that role-playing kind of slot that other warlocks don't.
Okay, so it checks some boxes. The first box is, this is not already done. This is new. That's good, because as we saw with Path of the Beast, that's like, oh, that's kind of just Path of the Totem reworked a little bit. So we don't want our subclasses like that. It has a lot of combat utility, and that's good. I think I'd like to see a little bit more out of combat stuff. Even the spells, most of them are combat related, and they're good spells. It's one of those classes that I think is checking a lot of in combat boxes. So on paper, it can look really, really good. But then when I play it, I'm like, I wish I could do some stuff out of combat beyond swimming.
Yeah. But you are a warlock, so there's a ton of invocations.
That's a great
for
point.
That. So that does free you up for a lot of those.
Yeah.
This is also one of the subclasses where it could be spellcasting or martial. You know, take the Pact of the Blade and go martial with this. Or, really lean into spellcasting. So it could be either one.
Yeah, the only one I probably wouldn't do is Pact of the Chain, because that usually requires your bonus action. But, you can just not use it in combat, which is how everyone else uses it.
Right.
But you have a great point. I think this allows you to take some more flavorful invocations that you might not have taken because you're worried about your combat features not lining up. I'm trying to look through right now if there's any that I'm like, yes, that's so fitting for the flavor of this. But let's see. Grasp of Hadar. That's not out of combat at all.
No.
But it's more tentacles.
Isn't that the one where it's your Eldritch Blast pulls them to you?
Correct. Yeah. Once per turn. Let's see. Come on. There's got to be something here. Otherworldly Leap. You can cast Jump on yourself at will. Obviously, everybody needs that, right?
Mm-hmm. That is a slept on invocation.
Is it, though?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. The fabled jump lock.
Come on, bro. Oh, that's good. Well, either way, invocations are really where the warlock is changed around quite a bit. So there's always more.
Mm-hmm.
And that 10th level ability is seriously wild. And I personally like
the tentacles. Yeah, that baits you into doing the movement stuff so hard.
Yeah, yeah. So taking some of those invocations will be good. I think it'd be fun. I think it'd be good to have at a table. I'd be curious what our listeners think and whether or not they see this being as a fun long-term style subclass, or if this is the type of thing that works better in a one-shot, like it seems a couple of subclasses do, where it's like, oh, I'd get tired of this playstyle. I don't think I would. I think this playstyle is awesome once you get to level 10 and you can just start throwing people into your tentacle pit.
I don't know. I could see getting kind of tired of it. But
I feel like
warlocks kind of have that problem anyways. A lot of times you either just do Eldritch Blast every time. This then gives you the option of the tentacle, but now you do Eldritch Blast and tentacle every time.
Which is great.
You're just Eldritch Blasting with a target on the battlefield.
Right.
No, this comes online very early. That's nice. And I think it's one of those things that it's a very obvious. When you're playing this, it will be obvious. You will be doing Tentacles of the Deep constantly. Other ones, it's a lot subtler. Unless you're obviously a Hexblade and play the Hexblade style. So I like it. I think it's good. And 14th level ability aside, it's all this is great.
It's fun. I'm going to ignore that 14th level ability.
It is the only just crap one.
Yeah. All right. So believe that's all we've got around the Fathomless. As mentioned, please let us know what your thoughts are in comments or Reddit posts or wherever you found us. And check out our affiliate, Bardly. I don't have like a fun way to transition it this time. So Bardly, if you have not heard us talk about it yet, Bardly is a tool for your games to allow the DM to seamlessly choose music for whatever situation your party may be in. It is great for in-person and actual online play, because online you can just give everybody a link and make sure that they are synced up and hearing whatever the DM plays. So no more searching for YouTube links or trying to, craft a playlist of epic battle songs beforehand. The music is specifically made to fade into the background and set a tone without being overbearing, and I really appreciate that. Used it expertly the other session when you guys were like, this feels really tense and uncomfortable, and there's this annoying ticking clock, and I'm like, too bad, Kevin, that's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
But it's inconsistent.
Yeah, it was speeding up and slowing down. Anyways, so if you want to get a bit of a discount, if you're in the club, you can use the code MNM50 to get 50% off a 3-month subscription. And now Kevin's going to double check to make sure that that's the right code, but it is. I know it is.
You looked really unsure.
Of course I do. I'm always unsure. MNM50.
Yep.
So check them out. They're great friends. I've been using that service for, 5-ish months now, and I love it. So check them out. Check us out by liking, subscribing, ringing the bell, and leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on social media @monsters_multi on Twitter, @rmonstersandmulticlass on Reddit. And if you want to support the show, you can go to monstersmulticlass.com/support. And if you want to see me be more animated with my hands, which I seem like I always get when we're doing the promotional minute, keeps me flowing, then you can check us out on YouTube. I don't think we have a custom link yet. YouTube has a little like threshold to get to for that. So just find us. Search Monsters of Multiclass on YouTube.
Yeah.
Anything to add?
No, you're pretty thorough.
Seemed mad about it. You're pretty thorough. Would you shut up already? Yes, I will shut up. I will let the episode end.
All right. Thanks for watching.